You are Locked On Bills, your daily Buffalo Bills podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I'm your host of Locked On Bills. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. Happy Monday to you. We have so much to cover here today on this Monday episode of the podcast. I want to talk briefly about some options that the Buffalo Bills can consider at the safety position that are currently available on the free agent market with Dean Marlowe, now a member of the Detroit Lions. And then it's going to be our cornerback primer. Just like last week with our defensive end primer, we're going to do the same thing today for the cornerback position. We'll talk about the need that exists on the roster. I want to talk about options on day one and day two of the draft that I think the Bills should be considering. I have some data that I can't wait to share with you about the success rate of cornerbacks drafted in the bottom 25% of the first round of the NFL draft so we can get an idea of what our expectations could be. I want to talk about what I think the Bills should do in the 2021 NFL draft as it relates to the cornerback position. And then we're going to close out this podcast with a 20-minute conversation with Kyle Trimble of Banged Up Bills, Doctor of Physical Therapy, regarding Caleb Farley and what he knows about his back injury and what we need to know about it in terms of him being an option for the Bills should he be available with pick 30. So a jam-packed Monday episode of the podcast. Let's start with some safety options. You guys heard me last week talk about Dean Marlowe now being a member of the Detroit Lions and how it leaves a big hole behind in terms of safety depth behind Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde. As things currently stand, the first guy off the bench is Jaquan Johnson, who is a good special teams player, but not necessarily a guy you want playing meaningful snaps for your defense. Other than Johnson, it's Josh Thomas, who was a UDFA last year out of Appalachian State. The Bills are missing veteran depth at safety currently on the roster, and we know that this safety position is critical for the defense. Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde are very much a big reason why the Bills have had defensive success since Sean McDermott has come to town. And so it's really important that they have sufficient depth behind them. So I started to panic last week when I thought about the Bills not having veteran safety depth. And then I looked at the options that are currently available on the free agent market. And there's a lot of names that interest me. I found like 7 or 8 guys that the Bills could sign right now that would immediately put my concern to rest about veteran safety depth. Now, obviously, they don't come in and have the familiarity in the system that Dean Marlowe did, having been with Sean McDermott since 2015. But these are veterans, guys that can come in and be serviceable backups and get you through a few games if they have to start. So who are those options? Daron Harmon, Kenny Vaccaro, Trey Boston. There's a name that's familiar with Sean McDermott, has played in the scheme. Bradley McDougal, Jahleel Adai, Adrian Colbert, and Tayshawn Gibson. The two names that I would prefer would be Tayshawn Gibson and Bradley McDougal. I think those guys would be great fits, veterans. Also, Trey Boston would be kind of next in line, given his familiarity with the scheme. But the bottom line here is that there are options. So, Brandon Bean, go get one of these guys. Let's go get one of these guys and put this need for veteran safety depth behind us. All right, let's laser in on the cornerback position and the NFL draft and what the Bills need to do. Let's start by identifying the need. I think it's pretty clear. The Bills need a challenger to Levi Wallace right now. Levi Wallace is a serviceable starter. We know what the floor is at CB2. But Levi Wallace is limited. He's a guy that lacks dynamic athleticism, and because of that, it limits the amount of man coverage that the Bills can run, and they have to account for Levi Wallace. They have to put bumpers up for a guy like Levi Wallace because he's limited. He's a guy that understands his athletic restrictions, stays leveraged. He's a smart player. He's done well not to give up a lot of big plays. But he's just not a guy that's going to be able to consistently turn and run with speedy receivers in the NFL. And because of that, you have to account for it with your scheme. You have to shade the safety over to that side. It limits your defense. So Levi Wallace can be a perfectly reasonable starter, but I think we can all agree that he's upgradable. And he's only on a one-year deal. So even if Levi Wallace is your starter this year, you are again unsure about the long-term option opposite of Trey White. The only other cornerback on the roster that's under contract beyond this season that's not named Trey White is Dane Jackson. That's it. And the Bills have been pretty quiet in this free agency period when it comes to cornerbacks and safeties. Outside of bringing Levi Wallace back on a minimum deal, the only thing the Bills have done with the cornerback position is release EJ Gaines. That's it. But there are short-term and long-term needs at cornerback. Not just at CB2, but in the slot. Taron Johnson, entering the final year of his contract. He made some big-time plays late down the stretch, the two pick sixes, right, against Baltimore and Pittsburgh. But if you remember, there was a point in time last year where he was benched for Cam Lewis. So you have short and long-term needs at slot and outside cornerback. We're concerned about CB2. Imagine if Trey White got hurt. Now you're concerned about CB1 and CB2. So I think it's pretty obvious that the Bills' need at cornerback is great. In just a moment, we're going to talk about targets. Targets for the Bills in the first round on day two and look at some really interesting numbers as it relates to hit rate for cornerbacks drafted in the bottom 25% of the first round of the NFL draft. But first, need to tell you guys about BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, MLB, and NHL seasons are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV, and they have real-time updated odds and props on almost anything that you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds, and it's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head on over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use our promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Let's talk about some targets. Targets that the Bills can consider in the NFL draft in the first round and on day two. In the first round, there are five names that I think are worth the first round pick for the Buffalo Bills at cornerback. Some of these guys aren't getting there, but we need to mention them because, first of all, you never know. Second of all, you need to be aware of all of the options because it gives you a understanding of how deep the top end of the class is. So while I don't think Patrick Surtain II from Alabama will be available at pick 30, I think it's important that we understand the full scope of the top of this cornerback class so we can understand the players that are likely to come off the board before the Bills pick so we can know who can satisfy the other cornerback needs that are out there and give us a true understanding of what players could realistically be there at pick 30. So Patrick Surtain II from Alabama, I'm sure the Bills love him. I mean, you watch this guy play, and he's a pro. He looks like a pro corner right now, and he's experienced in all coverage techniques. You know, Nick Saban at Alabama is just exceptional at training his defensive backs across multiple techniques, and I'm sure the Bills would love him. Really experienced in man coverage, in press coverage, in zone coverage. He has size, length, athleticism. He has everything. Unlikely he's there at pick 30, but he can serve as an option for a team picking before the Bills, which allows us to understand which players will be available for the Bills. The next player that we need to mention, I don't think he gets to 30, is J.C. Horn, cornerback from South Carolina. Size, length, athleticism. He was dynamic this past year. Really outstanding. Some big-time shutdown performances. Tested off the charts. I think he's gone by pick 16. Caleb Farley from Virginia Tech. I watched his tape in May of 2020 to do my summer scouting report on him entering the season, and it was love at first sight. I mean, you can watch him, and he is special. He's a special football player. Size, length, athleticism, ball skills. He's physical in coverage. And Virginia Tech, they put this dude on the field and said, hey, this third of the field, that's yours. We need you to take care of that. We're going to put our safety. The high post safety is going to be on the opposite hash. That's your third. Good luck. Teams went after him. Didn't matter. He didn't give up nothing. He's special. I watched his tape and I texted everybody I knew and said, whoa, this Caleb Farley is legit. You got to check him out. So then he opts out of the season. He's had two back surgeries now since 2019, an ACL tear mixed in there. But my goodness, he is a special football player when he's healthy. That's why the last 20 minutes of this podcast is going to be dedicated to digging into his injury stuff with Kyle Trimble so we can have a full understanding of this prospect. Because I could tell you all about how good he is on the field, but your best ability is your availability, and this guy has some serious medical red flags. Kyle Trimble will break that all down for you in the last 20 minutes of this podcast. So Caleb Farley very much could be a worthwhile swing for the Bills at pick 30 should he get there. Now, I don't have a great feel that Surtain, Horn, or Farley get to pick 30. These next couple guys, I think there's a chance. Starting with Greg Newsom, cornerback from Northwestern. Man, I loved studying his tape. 6 foot, 192 pounds, runs in the 4.3s. And this guy, I think he's scheme transcendent. He could play zone. He could play man. I think his ball skills are better than what his ball production will tell you. He's super feisty and competitive. Love the way the guy plays. Not sure if he gets to 30. If he does, you turn in the card. And the last guy that I think is a real option for the Bills in the first round is Eric Stokes from Georgia. A little over 6 foot, 194. Ran 4.29. Has really good length, 32 and 3/4 inch arms. Liked his tape at Georgia. Think he can play some man coverage. He's the type of guy that can turn and run with speed receivers. Bills kind of need that, right? Gives them more options on the back end. I think he'll be an option at 30. I think he'll be on the board. So those are the five dreams in the first round. Surtain, Horn, Farley, Newsom. I have two more players I want to mention, but I'm not sure that they're players I absolutely love at pick 30. Maybe if you are married to picking a cornerback with your first selection and you don't get one of the guys you like there, you could trade back and target one of these two players. One of them is Asante Samuel Jr. from Florida State. Good player, sticky in man coverage, physical, but he's 5'10", 180. I mean, I don't know that I'd expect the Bills to draft a player that's 5'10", 180 with 30-inch arms at pick 30. They typically value length from their cornerbacks and size. And I mean, you just don't get that from Asante Samuel. I think he plays above his weight class. I think he can play in man and zone coverage. But are the Bills going to be comfortable with his size and it not meeting their thresholds? I'm not sure if he's going to be an option. Elijah Molden from Washington is another option. I think he's the best slot corner in the class. So if the Bills are really serious about giving Teron Johnson competition this year and having their successor in place right now, Elijah Molden would be an option for the slot. I just don't think he helps you outside. I don't think he changes your CB2 conversation at all. So those could be some trade back targets. Other day two cornerbacks that I like. Ifeatu Melifonwu from Syracuse. Dude, 6'2", 205, 32 and a quarter inch arms. Runs in the 4.4s. Scheme versatile player. I think he's got really good ball skills. I like his size-athleticism combination. Tyson Campbell from Georgia. He's really traitsy and toolsy. I mean, he gives you size, length, athleticism. But, man, his ball skills worry me a lot. You know, he's a guy that I don't think has real natural coverage instincts. He doesn't naturally play the ball in the air. But if you want to take a piece of raw clay and feel like you can mold him into something and you trust your ability to develop cornerbacks, Tyson Campbell might be a worthwhile swing. Aaron Robinson from Central Florida, think he gives you position flexibility inside and outside. He's more of a third-round target for me. Paulson Adebo from Stanford, I would not hate him at pick 61. Would love him at 93, would not hate it at 61. His Stanford tape outside of the first four games of 2019 was really good. And I think people are really lasered in on that bad tape that he had to start 2019. But he finished strong, and his 2018 was elite. So I can get behind Paulson Adebo. A player I really like that I recently watched out of Michigan is Ambry Thomas. Man, you wish he had a larger sample size of play, but when you watch him on the field, I'm really comfortable with what I saw. Think he's scheme versatile. He can play press, zone, and man. Has good size, good athleticism, super feisty and competitive. Could be a slot option and an outside option. I have no reason to think Ambry Thomas can't play on the outside. You just wish he had more snaps under his belt. I mean, he's almost 6 foot 191, ran 4.4 with 32 and a quarter inch arms. Coming out of that Dom Brown Michigan defense. Very pro style defense. I think he'd be a good pick. One more name that's fun is Benjamin St. Juice from Minnesota. I mean, he's not a finished product by any means, but 6'3, 202, ran 4.5, 32 and 5 inch arms. I think from a developmental prospect perspective, if you pick him at 93, he definitely gives the Bills an exciting option that they could develop into, you know, potentially a starter beyond this year. Don't think he helps you this year, but you would like to have him in the mix for 2022 and beyond. So those are my favorite day one and day two options for the Buffalo Bills. A player that maybe you're surprised I didn't mention was Kelvin Joseph from Kentucky. He had great testing, and a lot of people like his upside at the next level. But between some weird stuff that happened at LSU that led to, you know, him not being part of that program, transferring to Kentucky, very inconsistent tape in my mind, a big-time guesser who is grabby in coverage. I don't know. I don't necessarily love Kelvin Joseph's tape or his fit on this football team. But if you tell me on day one the Bills get Surtain, Horn, Farley, Newsom, or Stokes, or on day two they get Elijah Molden, Asante Samuel Jr., Ifeatu Melifonwu, Tyson Campbell, Aaron Robinson, Paulson Adebo, Ambry Thomas, or Benjamin St. Juiced, I'm going to be really happy. So I did some digging, just like I did with defensive end. I looked at a 10-year sample size of the bottom 25% of the first round to see what type of hit rates there were. At defensive end, we didn't find any success, right? There was like literally nothing we could point to in terms of a success story from a defensive end drafted in the bottom 25% of the first round. My sample size is 2009 to 2018. The reason we go back to 2018 is because players deserve three full seasons to define themselves in the NFL in terms of what they are. and picks 25 to 32 is the bottom 25% of the first round, which is the range the Bills are picking in. When you look at the cornerbacks in that same 10-year sample size, my goodness, does this tell a different story. So let's put it out there. Let's disclose this data. In 2017, the Bills drafted Trey White, number 27 overall. That was a hit. In 2016, 26 overall, the Steelers drafted Artie Burns. That was a bust. In 2015, the Cowboys drafted Byron Jones, number 27 overall. That was a major hit. In 2014, the Chargers drafted Jason Verrett, number 25 overall. And he was awesome this past year. He's been injured, but I'm telling you, if that guy would have stayed healthy throughout his career, he would be regarded as one of the best cornerbacks in the league. And we got a little glimpse of what he's capable of this past year when he was healthy for the 49ers. 2014, Bradley Roby, number 31 overall by the Denver Broncos. That was a hit. In 2013, Xavier Rhodes, number 25 overall to the Vikings. That was a big-time hit. In 2011, number 27 overall, Jimmy Smith to the Ravens, big-time hit. In 2010, Devin McCourty to the Patriots, and number 27 overall. That was a big-time hit. In 2010, number 29 overall, Kyle Wilson to the Jets. That wasn't a major hit, but Kyle Wilson had a reasonable career as a slot corner in the NFL. In 2010, pick number 32, Patrick Robinson to the Saints. Still a contributor for them. Reasonably good hit. In 2009, number 25 overall, Vontae Davis to the Dolphins. Major hit. In 2008, number 25 overall to the Cowboys, Mike Jenkins. Had a reasonable career. In 2008, number 28 overall, Antoine Kaysen to the Chargers. Had a reasonable career. The only player at cornerback drafted from 2009 to 2018 in the bottom 25% of the first round of the NFL draft that was an absolute bust was Artie Burns. And you have some big-time hits in Trey White, Byron Jones, Bradley Roby, Xavier Rhodes, Jimmy Smith, Devin McCourty, Vontae Davis. This is a ripe area of the draft to pick a corner. And the Bills are good at developing defensive backs. I'll tell you what, this is what I'm thinking I want the Bills to do in the first round. Again, as I've preached, there's no reason to marry yourself to any one possibility. But this cornerback thing sure does look pretty sweet to me. So what should the Bills do? If there is a corner they like at 30, pick him. It's a premium position. You have a need to upgrade the position right now. You need an economic option in your secondary where you're already paying Poyer, Hyde, and White. And you are good at developing defensive backs. Get yourself a good player at corner. If you don't like the value at 30, make sure you get a guy you like on day two. The Bills need to come away with at least one cornerback in the top 100 picks of this draft. Like I said earlier, the only cornerback on the roster signed beyond this season, not named Tre'Davious White, is Dane Jackson. The Bills need to find some good young talent to fill out this depth chart. Need to tell you guys about Built Bar. It's the best tasting protein bar on the planet. They have so many amazing flavors. Some of my favorites are the cherry, lemon almond cheesecake. I like the caramel brownie. The apple almond crisp is delicious. They're all great, and they're all covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. It's like eating a candy bar, but they're good for you. Built Bars are great for anyone who is health conscious. Whether you want to lose weight, maintain weight, or just indulge in a delicious treat, you got to try Built Bars. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and great for anyone who is on the keto diet. Have a deal for you. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off your next order over at BuiltBar.com. I'm joined now by Kyle Trimble, doctor of physical therapy. He runs Banged Up Bills. You can follow him on Twitter at Banged Up Bills. And he's joining me today to have a conversation about Virginia Tech cornerback Caleb Farley. And Caleb Farley, in my view, is one of the 10 best prospects in the coming NFL draft. And he plays cornerback, which is a position of need for the Buffalo Bills, if nothing else, to upgrade Levi Wallace. But even if he can't crack the rotation this year, Levi Wallace is on a one-year deal. The Bills need a long-term answer opposite of Tre'Davious White. And Caleb Farley should not be available with the 30th pick in the NFL draft, but because of his injury history, it's a possibility. And because of that, we need to have a conversation as it relates to what his injury history is and if it's something that the Bills should be comfortable with or not when it comes to potentially using pick 30 in this coming draft on Caleb Farley. So, Kyle, that was a long lead, but welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Joe.
So I always have a hard time with injuries. That's why you join me every Friday to talk about injuries. I don't know all of these details and how to apply them to the football side of things. And that's just like Sean McDermott's not a doctor and he has a medical staff that assist him with those types of decisions. You're my guy for that. And so whenever I deal with injuries as it relates to an NFL draft evaluation, let me tell you what I do with them. I don't do anything. I don't do a single thing with them. I grade the traits, what I see on tape, their physical attributes, and the type of production they had in college and how I see that translating to the NFL. I have flags when it comes to injuries. I note them. I'm aware of them. If I was on the clock and I was an NFL general manager, I would have a flag by the players. And when we're talking about who we're going to pick, it could be a tiebreaker. It could be something that impacts the discussion. But for me and the way that I evaluate players and the purposes for which I do evaluate players, Kyle, I can't factor in these injuries. I really can't. But now we're talking about the Bills at pick 30. Should Caleb Farley, an elite talent, slide down the board and be available to the Bills, the only reason he's going to be available is because of injuries. And that means that several other teams said, we like this player. We're not comfortable with the injuries. So he's fallen and fallen and fallen. Now we're at pick 30. The Bills are on the clock. Caleb Farley's on the board. What do we need to know for Brandon Bean to be aware of when making that decision?
There's a lot with Caleb Farley that really makes you question if he's worth picking at 30 or whether he should have gone before or after. And we're going to know that at the end of the month here, but we're going to try, like you said, figure this out here. So I'm going to detail out what the injuries were in chronological order. And then we're also going to try to break down each injury, at least the major ones, and try to identify what risks they are. When I'm doing my injury analysis over at Cover One, you can certainly check out some of those past draft analysis. And I go back and reflect and see where the hits were, where the misses were, and that's how you learn to get better. So I look at where they could potentially be drafted, what the concerns are if they get drafted, how long they're going to be able to play, and what their impact is going to be. So I kind of look at it from the other side. Okay, if you draft this guy, this is an investment. You know, do you want to invest a first-round pick? When I think of a first-round pick, I'm thinking immediate day one starter. I'm thinking guy that should be able to play, you know, 7-10 years, be a strong contributor, and really make a difference on the team. And then, of course, as you get down rounds 2 through 7, that varies by talent levels and availability to get on the field. So when I think first round, I think a guy that's going to be there for a cornerstone, like we think of Trey White or Deion Dawkins, though Dawkins wasn't a first-round pick, so but a high draft pick nevertheless. So looking at Farley, he had a – I'm going back to high school because I found this. He had hip flexor injury, which has no bearing on anything. I'm just noting it because I try to be comprehensive. He did that during track. He went into his 2017 season that ended up being a redshirt because he tore his ACL. It doesn't state which side. It was a non-contact injury. They said he was – just out there doing drills and he had a pop. Looking at Instagram, because sometimes that's where guys put stuff up there, it looks like he has scars on the right side, which could suggest that he had the surgery on the right side, but there's no official designation for that. Misses the entire season, comes back in 2018, plays very well from what I saw. And he was really kind of getting on the radar of everybody. And then 2019, continued to play well, missed the last two games of the season with back spasms. Ultimately had a off-season surgery, which they get into more recently, saying he had a microdiscectomy on L5. So he takes off the 2020 season because of COVID, and he said that he wasn't liking how Virginia Tech was handling their COVID protocols and whatnot. So he takes off the season, and then it gets reported about 2 weeks ago or even a week ago that he has another microdiscectomy. And this guy is supposed to be a top 10 draft pick, can't miss, and then you're seeing all this stuff happen. And these aren't hamstrings. These aren't MCL sprains, little kind of nicks and bruises. These are pretty big comparable or concerning injuries that you need to be aware of for his longevity. One comparable, which it is comparable, but it isn't, is now Bills offensive tackle Trey Adams. He had a very similar injury history presentation with ACL, herniated disc, and we saw how far he fell, and he didn't even get on the field this year. I don't think it's going to happen with Farley at all, but just look at the presentation of how Adams was once a top 10 first round draft pick and he went undrafted, but still you can see how that injury history might lead to somebody falling. So looking at everything here, there's also the note that he had some type of head injury in 2019, but it's still guaranteed that he has a concussion, and that's kind of just a one-off thing, kind of like the hip flexor. So I'm going to hit the ACL first. So we know that the risk for re-tear an ACL on the opposite side is upwards of 20-30%, give or take, on the literature. And that's up for up to 2 years. So Farley's going to be 4 years out from that. We know that doesn't prevent somebody from ever tearing the ACL again, but we see the rates drop off. You know, we saw Harrison Phillips 2 years ago where he tore his ACL, though that was the same side as all of a direct contact. All things aside there's still a chance for that, especially with him being a defensive back, in that he has to react to what the offensive player is doing. So the offensive player can always dictate where he's going, running his route. The defensive player has to react, and sometimes that sudden reaction overloads that knee and cause the ACL injury. So it's a possibility, though he's 4 years out. I'm not as concerned about the ACL as maybe somebody a year, 2 years out. So it's just something to know, and certainly something that the teams are looking at from an arthritis standpoint, make sure there's no degeneration of the joint, and also make sure that there's not any chronic issues such as laxity or just residual pain or swelling that he kind of has to deal with there. So the back injuries, which I think is everybody's main concern with this here. So he had L5 operated on 2 years ago. We don't know what exactly caused the initial injury, but it was enough that he had to get a discectomy. So what happens in a discectomy is you have discs in between the vertebrae. They make up the spinal column of the vertebrae that make up the spinal cord and just give you support till you can stand up there straight. So they act as shock absorbers. They allow the vertebrae to move over each other, while giving support for the nerves to come out to the sides, innervate all the muscles, and do what they do coming off the spinal cord. So part of the disc that herniated out at L5, from what he said, pushes out against the nerve. He gets that classic sciatic pain, what we call radiculopathy, where it goes down the leg, it causes weakness, pain, feels like somebody's shocking you. So he had the surgery kind of take that out of there. I'm sure that they did some type of conservative rehab before that and realized it wasn't working. I've been told that that material kind of looks like crab meat when they're in there. I don't know why it is. It just, that's something I think they can identify, that they pull it out and trim it out and try to let things heal back up there. The rehab recovery time for that is about 3 months, and they can get back to doing the most of normal activities. At the time when he did that L5 surgery, he had a bulging S1 disc, which is the next level below. So he was training all off season, and then he said that it sounds like in February he was doing deadlifts in the gym and he irritated that structure. So he must also attempted to see whether he could calm things down and try to have surgery, or excuse me, to try to deal with it non-operatively, probably realized that it wasn't going to be corrected, and then end up having surgery, knowing that, hey, we want to know that this is fixed before you get in a camp and then you're limited and can't participate there. So I'm going to take a breath. And Joe, if you want to kind of give me your thoughts so far on that before we get into the next stage with this on how it's going to affect this draft prospect, that'd be greatly appreciated.
Well, I'm certainly concerned as you work through this, and I'm anxious for the rest of the history to be fleshed out here in your monologue. And I guess I've been thinking a lot about my follow-up questions for you, which are going to be really kind of asking you some tough questions in terms of, all right, well, would you do it? Would you pick him at 30 if your reputation or job was on the line to make this selection? Would you be comfortable doing it? And then the kind of the follow-up to that was, how do you factor in that if Caleb Farley is there at pick 30, that more than several, like, I mean, you're talking probably 10, 12 teams would have failed him. They would have said, no, we're not doing this. And it probably prompts you to ask yourself some tough questions. If you're willing to do it, well, why weren't they? What was the determining factor? What do they know that we don't know? Why should we be comfortable when all these other teams weren't? And so that's kind of where my brain's been going as you've been, dropping this information.
So I'm going to definitely talk about where the risk factors are and then whether I would take him or not. So each team is going to have their personal preferences on. They're going to have the imaging. They're going to be able to do the actual testing of the player. They just have much more information to make the determination. I'm going off of research, professional judgment, from what I could see from the research and from what's publicly available, and just trying to put things together. So microdiscectomies are relatively successful. And when I say relatively, meaning 80%, that they can come back and return to play without any problems and their performance is not affected. There is a 15% chance that they might need a revision, and that would be on the same disc. So seeing that he had L5 and then S1 would kind of remove the fact that he didn't have a revision. He just had different disc operated on. So that could just be kind of just that's how it is, but there's still a chance that he might have to have future issues with that. Looking at everything from that, there isn't really a huge difference on the lumbar injuries and discectomies affecting the longevity and draft placement. There are research out there that supports that if somebody's had a lumbar injury, that they're less likely to be drafted, that they are less likely to have a longer career than match controls. But the difference is minimal. Like, we're talking 4.0 years to 4.3 years. We're talking about 5 games difference between those controls there. And one of the other ones I looked at was 4.2 years versus 3.9 years non-operatively. So going back and rephrasing that, the people that had the surgery had a little bit longer career if they had the operation for a discectomy specifically versus if they didn't for the 3.9 years. And this was a team from 2003, 2011. They looked back at all the lumbar injuries that they had at the draft prospects that they brought in and whatnot. So Farley was better off to have the surgery and give himself the best chance to be drafted, which he will, and be drafted as high as he possibly could. So one thing also on note is there wasn't really a huge difference on performance. They said the pre-operative performance versus post-op performance, there was no difference with that. Now, that could be highly subjective because if you look at the numbers, everything else, but if they compare it against guys their age and position, I could see where they could say there's not really a big difference in performance, which is good. We also know that first round versus second round, you get that fifth-year option versus the fourth-year, bringing a four-year contract in the second round. So with the Bills being at pick 30, are you basically getting a low-end first-round pick or a high-end second-round pick? And that's just, you know, two picks difference there. So that's going to factor into the team's decision-making. Looking back at other things here, compared to other players, we saw Rob Gronkowski. I don't need to go too much into how he is, but his draft stock dropped when he was coming out of college because he had had different back injuries, and then he ended up having more in the pros. And he's been lumbering along, but obviously he's a Hall of Famer, and he's done what he's needed to do. We also saw DK Metcalf. DK Metcalf, he had the anterior cervical fusion when he was coming out. I believe that dropped him off a little bit, though there was also concerns about how big he was and if he'd be able to translate to the NFL, which they've shown he has been able to. But that kind of stuff didn't help him, let's put it that way. So looking at everything here, we know that the performance doesn't really change it. We know that it's a pretty successful operation. We know that there's a chance he could be revised. And we know that the career length is about 4 years after these procedures. Now, some of these are coming out after, you know, they've been drafted. Some of them are, they're in the league and they got 4 years afterwards. So that research varies, but that's been the number that we've seen is about 4 years. So do the Bills pick him, knowing that they have the fifth year option? If he's continuing to perform well and say, hey, we can get 5 years on a rookie deal and let him go play this thing out, knowing that he might be a ticking time bomb, or do we take him at second round? And if he's playing well, do we risk betting on him that this might continue to cause problems later on? I'm talking about, you know, recurring back issues such as a spasm, or could he need a fusion later on because the space decreases where this causes more pressure on the spinal nerves coming out and continues to have other problems. That's the one unknown. I couldn't tell you one way or another, but looking at everything as a whole, it seemed bad when I was doing this research. It really was. I wasn't a huge fan of this. And then I'm digging into it more. I'm thinking, I can live with this. The Bills are in win now mode right now. So they need a strong cornerback too. If you can get somebody in there that can just jump right in and start day one, and you have the fifth-year option to say, hey, we can plug you in, we can win the Super Bowl, and then, you know, your career's done for 5 years. Yeah, it's sad. It's a business. But if you can win a Super Bowl off a guy who can be healthy for 2 or 3 years, that might be worth it there. I see where maybe the Bills can pick him. I know Marcel Louis-Jacques made a strong play for running back, and I really liked his argument. But cornerback could be a safer play, and that might be something where you can get elite talent at a discount because other teams aren't crazy about taking him for that long-term impact. So if I were the Bills, I'm strongly considering cornerback too with Caleb Farley specifically because the risk is certainly there, but can you get 3 good years out of him while the window is open and say, let's get after it. So I'd love to see Brandon Bean take him, but there are other needs on the team and we'll see what they do in a month here. But the research is more favorable than I had anticipated when I started digging into this.
So I guess my big takeaway from what you said there is we're looking at about a 5-year strike zone for him to be able to play. And my concern with that is not only does he have the injury history that he does, and we're looking at potentially a 5-year lifespan here. He's a guy that didn't play football at all in 2020. And he's new to playing cornerback. I think he's very advanced in terms of technique and understanding of the game. But at the end of the day, time on task reps at cornerback are very, very limited. He's only played the position for 2 years. He came to Virginia Tech after playing quarterback and wide receiver before switching to he was a high school quarterback, came to Virginia Tech to play wide receiver, and then transitioned to cornerback for Virginia Tech. I mean, the time on task there is very poor, and he's entering the NFL with a short lifespan, and you need this guy to reach his ceiling right away. There's enough layers to this that makes me say, I don't know. I don't know if the Bills can maximize him because, or any team can maximize him because the shelf life is so short and he comes into the league inexperience at the position.
Do keep in mind, though, I mean, think about the average NFL career length. I mean, it's what, 3 years? So to say 4, I mean, there might be, you're looking at everything as a whole with these, you know, not just first round draft picks or seventh round, you're looking at everybody as a whole. So you have guys who had this injury in seventh round that, you know, don't do anything. And you got the other guys who have this injury and go play, you know, 10 years. In fact, one of the studies showed that two of the guys had a lumbar fusion, which, if you have a lumbar fusion, usually contact sports are not indicated after you've had that. One guy played 108 games. The other guy made 125 games. One made a Pro Bowl. So like you can still have long careers, even if you have, you know, significant back injuries like this. So there's still a lot of unknowns. You look at the average of this year, but I see your point too. It's like, can you get him up to speed? And I think that comes down to the Bills having the medicals right there at their fingertips to see what the doctors say, and then the confidence in their staff saying, can we get this guy up to speed to get us a Super Bowl? Or is he going to need 2 years to really get to speed, and we're not going to get maximize this? So I guess what it just comes down to where the Bills feel how well they can develop, and they've shown a good track record of developing guys, at least bring guys along well enough. And even if he platooned with Levi Wallace, that could be an even good option too, because we've seen that work in the past with other players.
Kyle, I appreciate your expertise, and it's times like this, I'm glad I'm not a doctor, and I'm glad that you are, and you can share this information. I certainly appreciate you giving us some of your time here on a very challenging topic.
Thank you, Joe. It was definitely difficult to talk about, but I think I laid it out enough where people can make an informed decision whether this is worth the risk or not. But it's certainly a very fun topic to talk about. Thank you.
All right, folks, that'll do it for us today here on the podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's discussion. Have another great podcast lined up for you tomorrow. I'm bringing in a guest because it's subject matter that I don't want to really handle alone. So don't miss it. Make sure that you're subscribed. Rate, review, and share the podcast. And I look forward to catching up with you again tomorrow.